Pumpkin beers get plenty of advertising and shelf space this time of year, but they're not the only fall beers out there. They're just our jumping off point, if you will, as we explore the seasonably significant tastes this hour. It's Wisconsin Weekend on the Morning Show. It's the 20th of October. Happy Friday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. If you find pumpkin beers a little too sweet, but you still want to get into the season of autumn tastes, then you should call in the expert, right? Robin Shepherd is a regional beer writer and senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog, Beer Here, is one of three honored this year by the North American Guild of Beer Writers. He's written books about beer travels and searching for the perfect pint. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Life Sciences Communication here at UW-Madison and a specialist for UW Extension. Robin, welcome to the show.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, pumpkin spiced lattes have been around for weeks. Are pumpkin beers in the same boat?
Oh, well, absolutely. You know, pumpkins, you just think fall, right?
Yep.
And so there is a seasonality to beer. And, you know, pumpkins are one of those, I think, an acquired taste. I personally, I'm probably good for about one pint the entire season, but I usually pick a, you know, a good
Be
one.
Be honest.
Yeah. It's one of those that sort of elicit a love-hate kind of relationship with the beer drinker, is that you find people that are so passionate about their pumpkin beers, and you find a lot of people that, you know, that they're just too much like pumpkin pie in a glass.
Is it because they're just too sweet? Is it the spice combination? What's going on in pumpkin beer?
Well, they are designed to, you know, mimic the flavors that you find in a pumpkin pie. And they're made in a variety of different ways depending upon the art and craft of the brewer. They often have actual pumpkin in them, but the spices are really what you taste.
They're pronounced.
Very, very much so. And they're the same spices that you find in pumpkin pie: allspice, cinnamon, nutmeg,
right.
Ground mace, you know, all of those wonderful sort of warm, spicy flavors that if you think of grandmother's pie cooling on the stove and that aroma, you should get that as well. What makes them kind of interesting, I think, from the craft brew drinker is that while you may not, you know, get overly excited about pumpkin pie in a glass, the brewers have gotten they've gotten very crafty in the way they make them now because of the base beers that go behind them. So, for example, the common way that pumpkin beers are often, they begin with, is usually a darker ale, like an amber or a brown or a porter, sometimes a stout. You add those flavors and some pumpkin and voila. But there are other brewers that have kind of pushed those limits, and they're using things like, Lone Girl Brewing, just north of Madison in Wanakee, has a pumpkin beer this fall that has a Belgian double behind it. Belgian beers often have these wonderful fruity, yeasty tones, but the double in particular has a characteristic black currant, the darker stone fruits.
Okay,
so
sure.
Begin to, in your mind now, to play a little, paint this game of the flavor profile with
yeah.
me. You add in some cherry and some plum
uh-huh.
into that pumpkin pie, and it's a different kind of an experience than just thinking about the pure spices and pumpkin.
It becomes a little more complex.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. That's what makes it fun searching for the perfect pumpkin beer.
Well, and not all fall beers are pumpkin-oriented. What are general characteristics you want in your glass in the fall?
Well, you know, fall is, you look around, you've got a lot of color beginning to change, right? So as a craft beer enthusiast like myself, I start thinking about those colors of fall, and I kind of gravitate from the lighter, golden, sharper flavors of summer to those maybe softer, maltier tones in the fall. So, you know, the traditional one that we think of, particularly in Wisconsin with our German heritage, is the Oktoberfest,
yes.
the Marzen. Mm-hmm. And so those are wonderful, well-balanced, amber-colored beers. So I really like those wonderful, sweeter beers this time of year. I'm not quite ready to give up and go into the really big, warm, viscosity-rich beers of winter yet. So I'm in a transition mode, and I think for me, fall is one of those times where I'm really loosening up and really exploring that range of color from golden all the way into the porters. But I'm not quite ready to
give up for the
cold, where I'm ready to sit down with a big imperial stout just yet.
Well, going back to those Oktoberfest beers, I'm wondering, in making those beers, do you use the old world German traditions in making those beers, or has that been perhaps diluted a bit?
Well, there is. I think that there's definitely a market niche for folks that really crave that German Reinheitsgebot. You know, you only want to do it with the four basic ingredients. It's got to be done this way. There is that very traditional mindset, and you can pick out those beers that are different, particularly the lager style, which an Oktoberfest, or you know, it goes back to the early 1800s, and it was always made as a traditional lager. But in today's craft brewing world, they bend those rules a little bit, so you will find. I think the Germans, particularly the German brewing fans in the audience, would say no, it's got to be a lager. But the fact of the matter is, the craft brewers today are making some as ales. They're bending those rules a little bit. The craft brewing technology today allows, you know, you can brew an ale and it tastes an awful lot like a lager. Now, don't quote me on it.
Yeah, right. Hey, you said it here.
Yeah.
We're talking right now with Robin Shepherd. He is a regional beer writer, senior contributor to the Isthmus. He has a blog, Beer Here. He writes books about beer travels and searching for the perfect pint. He's also an associate professor at UW-Madison. We're talking about autumn beer this hour. What is your favorite beer this time of year? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Are you head over heels over a fall flavored beer? Is there one that in particular might be a pumpkin brew? I don't know. But is there a particular brew that you just have to have in the fall? Join us at 800-642-1234. You can also post where you find that beer on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Robin, what makes fall beer choices different than the ones that people pour during other seasons? For instance, in the summer with more maybe pale ales.
Right. Well, in the summer with the warmer weather, I think a lot of people like that crisper, a little bit lighter colored kind of beers. That doesn't mean that there isn't a huge crowd that goes after, you know, big, bold imperial IPAs. But we tend to favor, I think summer, for example, is ideally well suited for Weizen beers. These wonderful golden, they're hazy to cloudy beers. They actually look kind of thick, but they aren't. They're wonderful with the banana and the cloves. They're lighter bodied beers. They're ideal for warm weather. They can almost, with a little bit of a fruity edge, they can almost be thirst quenching, if a beer can really be thirst quenching. Where in the fall, those little softer, sweeter tones are just, for me, they're more relaxing. I look for a brown beer in the fall. I love nut brown ales. They're a little bit of a twist on that just typical straight amber with a nice caramel background. The nut browns might have a little bit of a roasted toffee to actual nutty flavor behind them.
Really?
Shouldn't be overwhelming, otherwise they become almost a spice beer. But that's just a wonderful thing about the fall, and when you can almost smell the leaves, you know.
Yeah. Have craft brewers here in Wisconsin become more creative with what they're thinking, that the notes they're putting in their beers?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, everybody's sort of pushing the proverbial envelope to get the next greatest thing that nobody's had before. So it's really pushing those judged styles that brewers compete against. It's really sort of push those definitions in interesting, sometimes not so tasty ways. But yeah, I mean, that's what makes craft brewing fun, is it's the art side, that crafty side of the term craft brewing.
And with the spices that we find in the fall, and I'm sure the spice mixture has to be just right, what are particular spices that you look for that work well in autumn beers?
Well, the pumpkins, obviously, they come to mind. I think also we find some interesting takes with fruit beer in the fall, too. The harvest season with cherries and apples, beers can be blended with them quite easily. But you look for, a beer, all it has to do is market itself with Door County cherries. It's got your attention, right?
Yeah, it does. It does, right. But I always question, is it going to be too much in the beer? Am I going to get too distracted?
Right. Right. That's the challenge that a brewer has, is that there is a balance to the flavor that goes with that, but there also is an audience that's really looking for those wonderful pronounced cherries. Think about New Glarus Wisconsin Belgian Red and those Door County cherries that are behind that. That is a very fruity, almost sour-sweet kind of combination, but the cherry does kind of dominate the whole profile.
It just depends what you like. Seasonal lagers, they're a natural fit for October. Here we are in the midst of harvest season. There are plenty of seasonal ingredients to complement autumn ales. We're learning about fall beer this hour with Robin Shepherd. He's beer writer, senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog is called Beer Here. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What favorite beers do you look forward to having in the fall? Join us, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after this news update.
Since 1844, Pabst, a lot to look forward to.
I like beer.
It makes me a jolly good fellow.
I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Summer is a time for pale ales and citrus notes. Fall answers with pumpkin-flavored brews. Think darker ales and fresh hop beers. We're learning about the bountiful harvest of beers this hour of Wisconsin Weekend. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Robin Shepherd stays with us. He's a beer writer and senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog is called Beer Here. You have questions and comments as well. Join in at 800-642-1234. Where do you go for a fall brew? Is it different than your summer places to go, or do you frequent the same place all year round? Tell us about your favorite beer. Does it need to come from the tap, a bottle? Is the taste from the can the best? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Lydia in Luck. Hi, Lydia.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question, I'm looking for organic beers, and I have been able to find only Lakefront and Milwaukee, and they've cut back on their organic. And I did find a Samuel Smith lager from England that's absolutely wonderful, and they do a pale ale and some others. But isn't there some American organic beers or local organic beers? I'd appreciate any thoughts on that.
That is a definite market niche. You've hit the one that kind of came to my mind right off the bat, is New Glarus ESB, Extra Special Bitter. That actually lays claim to the first certified organic beer in the country in the Renaissance or the craft beer revival. So that definitely is one that you've found. That's a very nice beer. Some of the brew pubs from time to time will offer their take on organic beers. I know the Great Danes in Madison and Wausau have one that crops up every now and then. Nationally, Woolivers from Vermont is a brewery or a beer to look for on the shelf, too. There is a difference between the beers that will say they are organic and those that they will have the certified stamp with them. And Lakefront is clearly one that has taken that care to be certified. So is Woolivers. I mean, in some ways, you have to think about their entire brewing process to be certified is separate. So you don't want to mix malts that aren't, etc.
Yeah, right.
Now there are, it does come to mind that there are others that are sort of in that green brewing mindset, like Central Waters, which is I think a green tier certified brewery with solar panels. They are in Amherst.
Okay.
And I believe I want to think that they have a beer. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's called Shine On. That may have it's made at local ingredients. I'm not positive off the top of my head on organic. Another green brewery is the Grumpy Troll Brew Pub in Mount Horeb. They have solar panels on their roof. A lot of them are kind of going that way.
Yeah. Well, Lydia, good luck. Thank you so much for that call. Robin, not everyone likes beer. What would you recommend as a gateway fall beer for people who aren't, so hip on beer?
Well, one of the huge trends right now are the so-called sour beers, right? In the fall, we're finding some really fun things, blends with apple cider. One Barrel Brewing that's based in Madison, but they brew through Occupy Brewing, so their bottles are found throughout the southern third of the state. They have a beer that's two-thirds cider and one-third beer, and it has a little bit of a sour, kind of a green apple-like background to it, but its base beer is a German Kolsch, which is a very light-bodied beer anyway, but it's a different flavor. It's a different experience than just thinking about your IPAs with the hops right in front of you. I think beers with a little bit of cherry in them this time of year are quite wonderful, quite spectacular. That's, where I would go with that.
Let's take another call now at 800-642-1234. Pete is with us from Eau Claire. Hi, Pete.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A little different twist on maybe what you're talking about here. I'm an alcoholic. I haven't had a drink for nearly 25 years, other than I do partake in communion. But when I was drinking, I supported our local brewery, the Walters Brewing Company, and they came out in the fall with a Bock beer that I enjoyed immensely, obviously maybe too immensely. And then Leinenkugel's had a darker brew called Langy's Limited, which I fondly remember. Nowadays, I still occasionally like to drink a darker beer, but they're very few and far between. O'Doul's makes an amber, and Guinness actually makes a darker, obviously non-alcoholic beer. Tastes very similar to O'Doul's, but a little bit richer. But I'm just wondering why there isn't more of a market, or maybe that's the reason that there isn't more selection, because there isn't a market.
Well, there is a market niche for non-alcoholic beers, clearly. The big guys, the big macro breweries, have really been the ones that have provided the leadership on that. The technology required, the brewing approach to doing a non-alcoholic beer is pretty challenging. So you don't really find the small folks doing much with that. So that's probably why, what you're finding are beers that either are clearly from Miller Coors or Anheuser-Busch, or they may be a label that is something that they own or they create, that the big brewery is more in the background. So that's what you're seeing. There are some international ones that you might find. I think Beck's does a non-alcoholic beer, Klosterhauser also. But the technology, the consistency, it requires a fair amount of control to do a non-alcohol beer, because you're putting it in and you're taking it out.
Yeah. Well, Pete, thank you so much for that question. Good question. Robin, let's say you want to do a day trip on the weekend and sample some of the fall beers here in Wisconsin. Where might you go? Where would you suggest?
Oh, I love the travel with the leaves this time of year, right? So one of my favorite jaunts would be across the northern, that slice of Wisconsin, Lake Superior, Highway 2. If you think about going right up through the middle of Wisconsin, and your departure point might be Stevens Point, where you've got some really wonderful breweries there with Oso Brewing and the history and tradition of the Stevens Point Brewery. Go a little farther up north, Wausau has become quite an interesting beer town in Wisconsin. A lot of interest there from the Great Dane has an outlet there. Bull Falls, somewhat of a German-focused brewery. Red Eye Brewing is a wonderful little brew pub in Wausau that just does this wonderful eclectic beers with good food on the side. And then Cozy Yak is a brewery and winery, I believe, and you could go have a day there for sure. And then just kind of meander up through Minocqua, Woodruff. There's a couple breweries, and then you're up on Highway 2 before you know it. Great destination is South Shore Brewing in Ashland. I seem to recall that this weekend is it's next weekend, the old Rittenhouse Inn, wonderful B&B up in Bayfield. They do a beer retreat weekend. It's theirs, part of the B&B.
What's a beer retreat?
Well, it's their beer weekend.
Okay.
And so it's 2 or 3 days of having some good local beers from that region. They sometimes have had Beau Boulanger from South Shore, the brewmaster, come in and do a little program, but you stay in the old Rittenhouse. They have some tours that kind of go out of the Rittenhouse as well, but it's a wonderful way to sort of enjoy the leaves, Lake Superior, and it's in a wonderful setting, obviously. And after you leave Ashland, stay on Highway 2. There's White Winter Winery in Iron River, and the Duluth Superior neighborhood has gotten to be quite a beer mecca. Duluth Superior has just exploded in the last 3 to 5 years with small little microbreweries that have come in there.
They say something about the water there, too.
Well, you know, there's the romance of Lake Superior,
yes.
Period.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't get much better when you're, I don't care what the temperature is, just to feel that that sea breeze coming off Lake Superior with a nice Belgian ale sitting at Canal Park Brewing where you can actually see Lake Superior. I tell you, it doesn't get much better than that. Or you stay at the Fitker Hotel in Duluth, which is an old historic brewery that they converted into a entertainment and shopping complex with the old Fitker Hotel. You can wake up in the morning and hear the horns on the big ships that are coming into the harbor.
Fabulous.
I mean, it doesn't get much better than that, right?
Well, it sounds like you're saying that there you can also create experience around your beer as well. So that ambiance, is that important as you taste your beer and as you enjoy it?
I think that's all what is captivated the current interest in craft brewing. That's a big part of it, is the experiential side of what beer is about. The traveling, finding places, a little bit like a scavenger hunt. It's not just about going there to have a beer or, you know, about how many beers you have, at least for the traveler that's motivated. What they're doing is the so-called journey. You know, it's the destination is great, but it's what happens along the way that is so fabulous. Think about how to increase an experience to Door County.
Right.
There's some wonderful breweries there. Door County Brewing is opening its new brewery here later this month. They are a small little brewery that was sort of popped up on the map about a couple of years ago. They had a small tasting room. They partnered with some bigger breweries to sort of get their products out in the marketplace statewide, so they're known. Now they've installed a new production brewery. They opened their tap room about 2 or 3 months ago. But it's a great way to go up the peninsula, stop off there, and, you know, enjoy the cherry season now where you can make cherry pies, and then think about it in the spring where the cherry blossoms come in.
There you go. We're talking right now with Robin Shepherd. He's a regional beer writer, senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog, Beer Here, is one of three honored this year by the North American Guild of Beer Writers. He writes books about beer travels, and he's an associate professor in the Department of Life Sciences Communication at UW-Madison and a specialist for UW Extension. You can join in this conversation about fall beer, 800-642-1234. Is there a particular beer you appreciate during the fall? Is it hard to find? Is there a particular beer in the past that you've really enjoyed and now you're wanting to explore more beers down that same line? Bounce it by Robin, 800-642-1234. You can post about your favorite fall beers over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Robin, you've mentioned so many different breweries. How are they doing right now in this economy? Are we seeing more open up? Is it plateaued? How are these little microbreweries doing these days?
Well, microbrewing is a big deal. It's not just what you hear on the radio, read in the paper. We now have over 5,300 craft brewers in the United States. That's the most we've ever had, even before Prohibition. Craft brewers, when you think about overall beer that is consumed, craft beer makes up about 12.5% to 13% of beer sales.
Okay.
So there's still, quite a bit of, 88% that's out there that is the big guys, the macro brewers. But that segment is continuing to grow. We grew at about 6% last year in terms of the craft beer sales. The numbers, though, are staggering in terms of the actual businesses that are opening up. In 2012, we were half of that number of 5,300. We're opening breweries at the rate of 2 a day in the United States. So is there a bubble? That's often gets asked in conversations like this. I personally don't believe we're at a bubble yet. There's still a lot of room for growth in the craft industry. there is a focus that you're beginning to see, like we did in the mid to late 90s, where it's more than just the beer itself. The quality of the beer is a distinguishing factor in some of these very small operations. The ideas that we just talked about a moment ago, that it's a destination place.
Mm-hmm.
What are the amenities that go with that? What's that journey like?
What's the experience like?
That experience is very important to today's craft beer drinker. In cities like Madison, for example, the amount of craft beer that's on tap is somewhere around, when you go into your favorite tavern, nice spot, restaurant, and you think about the saturation of craft beer. You know, it used to be you'd go in and there were kind of, you know, one or two choices, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
But now that's not the case. In cities like Madison, we're probably up to something like close to 30% of the beer that's offered, sold in that city is craft oriented.
Consumers, do they expect that, though? Is that being driven by people, consumers?
Well, the craft beer industry is, yes, the answer is yes, that there is a huge market niche that you now go into your favorite restaurant and there's a page for the beer menu, right?
Mm.
That wasn't there 25 years ago. It was, you know, what was ever off the top of the head of the staff person that was serving you. Now you go in and it's almost intimidating sometimes when you think about it. Or go into your favorite package store and you look at that sea of color in that cooler,
yeah.
Right? Where do you start?
It's almost as intimidating as wine, perhaps, you know, with the array and just the whole, and where do you start? Exactly. But hopefully you start in this conversation here we're having about fall beers. Let's go to Jared now in Manitowish Waters. Hi, Jared.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Sure.
My wife and I really enjoy to have the Pumpkin from Southern Tier out of New York. They bring it up here in the fall, and it comes in a nice little four-pack. It's almost an imperial beer, so it's a little bit higher in percentage, but we just keep it in the refrigerator, take it out, let it get close to room temperature, put it in a little snifter glass, and it's just like having pumpkin pie right after dinner. So
yes, that is a wonderful beer. I agree.
I wish they had it all year.
Well, there are some other beers that are sort of you remind me of in thinking of that genre of Southern Tier. Lakefront has a couple of takes or versions on their pumpkin beer. They make theirs as a lager. They're straightforward, original pumpkin beer. But they do, this time of year, they do one that has been fermented in brandy barrels.
Oh.
So think about that little bit of combination of pumpkin pie and a little bit of that apple from the brandy. It also is a little higher in alcohol because it's like Southern Tier. It's ramped up a little bit on the malts and the fermentable sugars that go into it. So you end up with a beer that is probably 8% or above.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really rich in that wonderful sweetness of the pumpkin and the warmth of the brandy. Potosi has one that's very similar as well. They have a straight Stingy Jack pumpkin beer, but then they do one that's aged in whiskey barrels.
Oh, okay.
Strahan whiskey barrels. And the Lone Girl that I mentioned earlier, they just released their pumpkin beer. Next week, they're going to release the same beer aged in J. Henry barrels.
There you go. The creativity, it just keeps going. The fall season always ushers in new brews, which can typically contain notes of caramel, cinnamon, and other spices reminiscent of cool fall days. We're learning about that with beer writer Robin Shepherd, who is our guide. His blog is Beer Here, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. You can post about your favorite beers over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Join us. We'll be back after these news headlines.
In heaven there is no beer, that's why we drink it here. And when we're gone from here, well, our friends will be drinking all the beer. Everybody sing!
In heaven!
For many beer enthusiasts, autumn is prime season for beer. Think of the release of Oktoberfests, pumpkin ales, and other warm, rich, dark beers made especially for drinking on a cool autumn day. Not thinking it's going to be a cool autumn day today, but we can imagine. We're discussing these beers with Robin Shepherd as our guide. He's a beer writer and senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog is called Beer Here. We welcome your comments and questions. 800-642-1234. What is your favorite fall setting to enjoy your favorite fall brew? Tell us about it. Where do you go? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go to Larry in Baraboo. Hi, Larry.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm an IPA is my favorite beer, but we were just recently out in Portland, Oregon, and what they do in the fall is the fresh hop beers. They don't dry the hops, and they brew the beer with the fresh, and it's just a totally different taste and everything. Are you familiar with that?
Yes.
Is there anybody in Wisconsin who's doing that?
Well, it sounds like you're hooked on that very wonderful seasonal delicacy, right?
Yeah, I am now. That was the first time I had the opportunity to try it. It was wonderful.
Well, I'm envious to think that you were in the Pacific Northwest where almost 80% of the craft brewing hops are grown at the time of harvest. You have good karma, my friend. You know, wet hop beers, they're part of the fall lineup, just like pumpkin beers are in October, in Oktoberfest. You know, it's the season when the hops come off the field, and the brewers really love to do those kinds of beers because it gives them a little bit more of a challenge to put fresh hop flowers. You know, the cones are technically flowers. You drop those into the beer themselves. And yes, breweries here in Wisconsin are doing some of those beers. There are a handful of breweries that actually do them with locally grown hops so that they're pulling them right out of the field and putting them right into the beer. Sprecher and Central Waters have done those types of beers in the past. One beer that I would really encourage you to sort of think about, if you can still find it, it's from the brewing project in Eau Claire. It's called Dare Mighty Things. And the core beer to that has a combination of four different hops, but they just came out about 2 weeks ago with their wet hopped version featuring Citra hops. And Will Glass, the owner and brewmaster, actually has his hops flown in overnight from the Pacific Northwest and gets them into the brew kettle within a day of after they arrive, puts that into the beer, does the beer, and as soon as the beer is done fermenting and ready, he cans it, and then he self-distributes. So if you're in the southern part of the state, he has it put in the back of a pickup truck and delivered firsthand to the package stores. And it's a hard beer to find. The beer folks, so-called beer geeks, I think they follow his truck around from store to store. But it is it's quite special in the wet hop version. It's a nice beer overall, but boy, the fresh hop, that fresh, when you can get them like you got them in Oregon or Washington State, oh, wow, I'm envious of your trip.
Larry, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. It sounds like, Robin, timing is very important and the chemistry is very important.
Oh, yeah. Beer is science, believe it or not. It's not necessarily rocket science, mind you. but for fresh hop beers in particular, timing is very important because you want those hops at their freshest state. They're a little easier to deal with, and nobody really wants stale flowers put in a beer, right?
No.
So, you want to get them in as quick as you can while their acids and everything are right at their freshest state. They will range from intense flavors like a hop, well, called Citra, is going to have those wonderful tropical flavors you would expect, oranges and tangerines and grapefruit, things like that. And those really take on a different, more aromatic kind of flavor and as part of the flavor as well when they're at their freshest state.
For those citrus flavors, what are they using to achieve that citrus?
Well, those are
overtone.
The variety of the hops themselves.
Okay.
That's one of the other things that has happened in the industry, particularly in the last 5-10 years,
uh-huh,
is that the ingredients that are going into beer are getting just as creative as the beers themselves. So the hop industry in the United States has exploded with different varieties varietals that used to be, for example, 15 years ago when you said India Pale Ale, IPA in Larry's terms, you were looking at something that was raw with a lot of pine in it and very harsh bitterness kind of things. When you picked up an IPA about 15 years ago, that's what you expected. Not necessarily today, because the variety of hops bring out, they could be pine, but they could be the citrus tones. There's a lot of beers that are out there now that really are in that juicy, fruity realm of orange, mango, yeah. melons, strawberries, watermelons.
And when I taste it, I think, how did they do this?
A lot of times it has to really focus on the variety of the hops themselves. Those qualities, be they aromatic or be they flavor components, they come out based on when hops go into the beer making process, what the varieties are. Hops are being bred just for those wonderful, juicy, fruity kinds of flavors. One of the hottest trends right now is called the New England Pale Ale or IPAs, and these are the twist on the India Pale Ale. They're using these really wonderful tropical hops with oranges and melons and grapefruit and all that. And then they're leaving the beer, they're intentionally making the beer cloudy. So they're adding in some wheat or oats. Okay. And so it looks a little like a Hefeweizen, but it just hits you with this incredible Florida Tropicana kind of
completely nose unexpected.
Yeah, right. And it's usually really bright and crisp and juicy.
Oh, cool. Well, you know, we had Tom from Black River who called. He says he likes the bourbon barrel-aged beers, and he likes them all year round. He says Central Waters has some great varieties.
Oh, bourbon barrel beers are they are an acquired taste for a lot of folks. I'm with him. I like them year round, particularly this time of year. They're a nice way to sort of ease into the fall. The richer ones, the more boozier ones, I kind of push back into the post holiday season per se. Mm-hmm. But Central Waters is a good brewery. A lot of breweries are kind of coming up with their barrel aged programs. Lakefront is another great example of that. It's almost a subset now when you look at a beer menu. I'd be surprised if you didn't see at least one barrel offering on more extensive restaurant menus. The other interesting thing for beer people to watch is where those barrels come from. What were they used for? Were they bourbon? Were they whiskey? There's a beer that's coming out of Milwaukee Brewing this week that is it's a lighter-bodied Saison, but it was fermented in Chardonnay barrels.
Oh, okay.
So it has those wonderful kind of lighter, crisper, yeasty, earthy qualities, and then it has that little undertone of oak and red wine.
So as we wrap up here, curious, what beer will you be drinking this weekend and why?
Wow, that's a hard one to pin me down on. Usually, you know,
the next 30 seconds.
Well, I think with this last question, I'm going to be looking for maybe a little bit of a bourbon barrel, you know.
Oh, you talked yourself into it, right?
I think I had, yeah. This time of the morning, I go that way or I go a coffee stout. Yeah, I need a little coffee.
All right. Well, Robin, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun.
That was Robin Shepherd. He is a regional beer writer, and he is senior contributor to the Isthmus. His blog is called Beer Here, and it's one of three honored this year by the North American Guild of Beer Writers. He's written books about beer travels and where he finds the great beer, searching for that perfect pint. He's also an associate professor in the Department of Life Sciences Communications at UW-Madison and a specialist for UW Extension. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. One bar in Madison has served beer lovers for more than 150 years. Bill Rogers owns the Malt House, formerly the Union House, here in Madison.
Nobody really knows for sure when the hotel was built. It actually predated the Civil War, and the Union House got its name from the Union soldiers. Union soldiers used to come and stand at the very bar we have here. If you ever look at old tavern photos, there are never any seats in the bars. It was all what we now call vertical drinking. You pack as many people into a bar as you can, and everybody stands up, and the bar owners try and sell as much beer as they possibly can every single minute. Union soldiers used to come here, both on their on leave from Camp Randall, and if you believe some of the stories, some soldiers would go AWOL and come out this way. We're about maybe 5 miles from camp, and it was there were no roads out here at that time. There was just dirt trails through the woods. You'll notice that there's a lot of low-lying areas. Well, that was all marsh and swamp back in the day, and so people would march through the swamp. This would be like their last night of freedom, and they'd drink, and apparently there were girls upstairs, and they would go visit the girls, and then head off to Camp Randall to serve in the Civil War. The Union House Hotel did offer, well, several anyways, local beers. There is documentation that they served Breckheimer beer, and I've seen some indications that Feuerbach beer was also poured across this bar. Feuerbach, of course, one of Madison's last large independent brewers, and that was one of the first beers that we poured when we opened. I know Peter Feuerbach and wanted to be able to say that Feuerbach beer has been poured over this bar now for 3 different centuries. My favorite part of the bar is just the bar rail, the patina that's on there, and the way it's worn with, 100 years worth of elbows laid on the edge of the bar there. The thought of the numbers of people of all different walks of life that have been through here, drank at this bar, it makes you pause.
Wisconsin Life is produced by Erica Janik. It's a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. You can find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. The Morning Show is produced by Keely Baltina. Michelle Good was technical director this hour. Michelle Johnson is the Morning Show's executive producer. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is Wisconsin Weekend here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.